Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
It is the Friday before the AFC and the NFC championship game, and we are going to be spending a lot of time in today's show breaking down the AFC and the NFC championship game. We'll talk with Jeff Shorts in hour two. He's going out to Kansas City. He's the brother of Mitchell Shorts, the right tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. We will break down the game with him, see how many layers of clothes he's going to be taking and what he expects in Arrowhead Stadium for that big game beneath the blood moon on Sunday as the Chiefs try to advance to the Super Bowl. We'll also talk with my guy Mike Leach, the Washington State football coach. He's scheduled to join us in hour three on this show. And we're going to have a lot of fun as we finish out the week here. And I appreciate all of you who are spending your mornings with us across the country and indeed around the world. Wanted to start off with a story I thought was really pretty cool. You guys know I have three kids. I have a 10-year-old, I have an 8-year-old, and I have a 4-year-old. And one of the best things about being a dad or a mom, if you are a sports fan, is you get to go back in time and start to view the world of sports through a child's eyes once more. Because at some point, no matter who you are, you become more cynical and jaded about the world of sports, just like you do about the world in general. Very few people can continue throughout their entire life to view the world through a child's eyes. And if you are a sports fan, which I would imagine just about everybody is who is listening to this story right now, you remember in some way being a kid and what made you become a sports fan in the first place. And also the childlike joy you received from watching athletes play games, either for a living or in college or whatever sport you choose to pursue. And so all three of my boys are sports fans of differing degrees. The 4-year-old is obviously the least committed to sports right now. But my 10 and 8-year-old start off every morning like I used to by waking up to see what happened in the night before in the world of sports. So yesterday, after I did the radio show, I went to my one of my kids' elementary schools, and it was spelling bee day. And if you remember doing the spelling bee, you have it's on television on I think ABC or ESPN, the big national spelling bee. But it's similar to that. What happens, you know, in second grade? So the second graders and the third graders, my middle kid, are having a spelling bee. There's 20 kids out there arrayed in the chairs, and they go through multiple rounds, and if you miss a word, you're out, and there's a lot of drama. And if you're a parent, my God, like, you really don't even understand how stressful sports are until you become a parent and start to watch one of your own kids do anything in any way related to competition. You're just on pins and needles throughout, and every single person who's a parent right now that has ever been to a Little League game knows exactly what I'm talking about. So my second grader ends up in the final two. He misspells a word, then the other kid gets up and asks to spell his word and then spell an additional word to be able to win. That kid wins. My second grader is crushed like anybody is when you lose a close competition or lose at all. But certainly when you're down to the final two and there are several hundred kids watching you spell and you lose. But he did something that was like, I was so proud of him. And immediately after he lost, he went over and gave the other kid a hug and said he was proud of him. Immediately, like literally the second that he loses officially, he did that. And as a parent, I was so proud of him for the way that he responded. And then he comes over to us and, you know, he's upset and he's trying to hold back tears because he wanted to win and everything else. And I told him I was proud of him. And then we leave the school. I've got my 4-year-old with me. We leave the school And later that evening, last night, we're sitting around watching Lakers, I think it was, against the Thunder, and also watching the Nashville Predators play. We're flipping around. He likes to watch sports with me in the evening. And I was reinforcing that I was really proud of how he had done in the spelling bee, that I was most proud of the way he responded in the immediate aftermath of losing. And I said to him, I said, you know, where did you learn that lesson? Because as a parent, when your kid does something good, you're happy, but you're also thinking, I want to make sure my older kid does this. I want to make sure my younger kid does this. And without skipping a beat, my 8-year-old said, that's what Jalen Hurts would have done, Dad. Now, he is an Alabama fan. He enjoys rooting for Alabama. He enjoys rooting for teams that don't lose. But that's what Jalen Hurts would have done, Dad, was just such a wow moment for me, because it brought home again something that I think lots of athletes and lots of adults, let's be honest, don't think about all the time, but something that my dad told me when I first had my first son. They're always watching, and you never know what they're going to see you do as a dad that they end up emulating. And you, as anybody who has ever heard a young kid curse because they saw mom and dad curse knows, they're always watching. But also, if you are an athlete, even a young one like Jalen Hurts, I think it's a challenge for many to understand that when you're 18, 19, or 20 years old. And I think that Jalen Hurts, because of the way that he was raised and the job that his parents did, has had a uncommon grace in the way that he dealt with his public benching in the national title game, and also the entire last season. I'm rooting him well now that he's decided to go on to Oklahoma. But that just really brought home to me the impact that total strangers in the world can have on your kids. And I think no matter who you are out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you have kids, you don't know who they're going to end up influenced by, and you hope that the influence they take ends up being a positive one. So I tweeted that out last night, late last night, Jalen Hurts saw my story that I had put out on Twitter and said, wow, little things like this mean so much to me. Know that they are always watching. That's powerful. And I did just think it was an interesting and illustrative story of the impact of sports on a small level in my own family that I think a lot of you out there listening right now will either in your own lives when you were a kid respond to in a positive way, or if you are now a parent, you'll hear that story and you'll think, wow. And in a larger sense, I believe that speaks to why sports matter. Because a lot of times people say, why do sports matter? You're on a show for 3 hours every morning talking about the toy chest of life, the world of sports. Does it really matter in a larger context at all? And I always say yes. And I say it doesn't matter for purposes necessarily of who won or lost. The vast majority of us are not going to make a living in the world of sports based on whether or not we win games. But just about every single person out there who has ever played a sport has come to understand for the first time, probably in your life, the pain of losing when you are trying so hard to win something and then having to make the decision, how do you respond to defeat? How do you respond to losing in that moment where you go from wanting to win with everything in your fiber to losing? I think that ultimately defines who becomes a success and who becomes a failure in life. If you can lose, put everything you have into something and fail and get back up and go hard again the next time, you are going to be a success in life. I really firmly do believe that. And that is the lesson that I believe every kid can learn from sports. Because it's a little bit of a cliche, but it's not how many times you get knocked down. It's whether you choose to get back up every single time. And I feel like much of what we deal with in life today, in larger society, we're trying to make things easier on kids, softer, gentler, and that's fine. But what we have to avoid is trying to take away every bad thing that can happen to a kid. And losing is tough and it's painful, but it can also be very ennobling, because when you lose and you choose to still be trying as hard as you can the next time, you learn the most important life, I believe, that can, the lesson I believe that can be taught by sports, which is you have to be resilient and you have to get back up when bad things happen to you. And if you keep getting back up, eventually good things will happen to you. But you've got to have that mental toughness. You have to have that ability to deal with defeat. And I question whether kids in today's softened society outside the world of sports really deal with defeat very often. There's a small story from a spelling bee. There's probably 10,000 spelling bees going on yesterday across the entire country. But there were certainly a million athletic events going on as well. And I think every single one of them is teaching us something. And the key is to figure out how to take whatever you're learning from sports and apply it going forward in your life. And I just want to give props to Jalen Hurts, who probably never will meet my son and never would have known the impact that the grace in which he carried himself while not having things go his way, while losing, while experiencing defeat, while experiencing what it's like to lose his job, was an inspiration to a little kid. And I think there are every day a lot of stories like that happening that don't get shown the light of day. The brightness and positivity of modern day athletics and modern day athletes that is often overshown by the scandal or by something negative that is instead the focal point of the day. So I wanted to start off with that story. Props to Jalen Hurts. Good luck to him at Oklahoma.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
My prediction for what's going to happen this weekend, I love the Chiefs -3 and I like the Saints -3.5. I think both home teams are going to win. I think both home teams are going to cover. I think we are going to see a Saints-Chiefs Super Bowl. I think Patrick Mahomes is going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl after going through the legendary Tom Brady. And then I think he's going to have to go through the legendary Drew Brees. I think it'll be a great matchup. We'll be broadcasting live for that entire week from Atlanta. I can't wait for it. And I think that is going to be our matchup. What say you, Danny G?
I agree with you in the AFC. I disagree with you in the NFC. Let's start with the AFC. The Chiefs D-line, I think, is going to be the key to the AFC championship game. Chris Jones, the way he batted down, what, four different passes last weekend, he'll be all up in Breeze's face. Justin Houston, D Ford. We know what happens if you are able to get hands on Tom Brady. If you can make him uncomfortable in the pocket, you can win the game. I give the Patriots a lot of respect, but I think the Chiefs pull out a close one, and they will represent the AFC in the ATL. In the NFC for the Rams, I think the key is that ground and pound running game. I was reading how yesterday CJ Anderson called himself the freshest running back in the league. Gurley likes to break the runs to the outside, whereas CJ pounds the ball up the middle. It's a great combo. I think that's going to really help the Rams control the clock, keep the ball away from Drew Brees and Michael Thomas, who might be, I'm going to say, top three wide receivers in the league. Watch for him to still have a huge game. But I think L.A. pulls out a close one. It is going to be a Rams-Chiefs Super Bowl.
All right, what about you, Eddie Garcia?
Yeah, I agree with Danny. I will say, as far as the NFC side, I think Aqib Talib will be a key addition this time for the Rams, matching up on Michael Thomas as much as possible. I'm also going to have a semi-bold prediction. I think Taysom Hill, they're going to get cute with him, and he's going to make a key mistake at some point in this game that's going to blow up in the Saints' face a little bit, and that'll be a key play in the game. As far as the Patriots and the Chiefs in the AFC, I really think that home win for the Chiefs in the last round gives them a lot of confidence. I think that they feel like, look, we've got Patrick Mahomes now. It's a different time, a different era for us. And for the Patriots, I don't understand why they struggled so much on the road, but five losses to non-playoff teams, they're just a different team away from home. So I like the Chiefs and I like the Rams.
Yeah, the Taysom Hill prediction is an interesting one, because I'm a little bit like you in that I have watched the Saints all season,
and Drew Brees is having an MVP caliber season, a Hall of Fame, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame caliber season. He's completing 74% of his passes. And I wonder what they're doing when they put him out wide and bring in Taysom Hill for so many plays. I do think this. At some point, they have to have a wrinkle where Taysom Hill throws it to Drew Brees, right? And Drew Brees is throwing it back down the field somewhere else. I thought Taysom Hill in the game against the Eagles, I mean, that pass he delivered to Alvin Kamara was perfect for a touchdown. That's a wrinkle and a play I think they've been saving for a while. I think, you know, when they just go with like the single wing and they roll him out to the right, I do think a lot of times those plays are wasted, but I think there's going to be a couple of subtle derivations that Sean Payton has been saving that he may debut in the NFC Championship game or in the Super Bowl if the Saints get there. I enjoy watching Taysom Hill. I'm sorry for bringing up his name for Texas Longhorn fans who I think he ran for like 900 yards against them in back-to-back years. Dub, who you got?
I'm with you, Clay. I like the Chiefs. I mean, this is relatively uncharted territory for Tom Brady and the Patriots. Tom Brady has started in more Super Bowls than road playoff games. I think the Chiefs get the cover at home, and the Saints, I just don't trust Jared Goff in this spot. And Drew Brees got off. He got away with a slow start last week. He's going to be sharp. They get up on top early and keep the foot on the gas.
Yeah, see, I think that is definitely going to be true of the Saints in the Superdome. I think the fact that Sean Payton rested him for 3 weeks and they were really kind of came out, I think, out of sorts. Again, I go back to that first play of the game between the Saints and the Eagles. Should have been a touchdown pass. Should have been a touchdown pass from Drew Brees to put the Saints up 7-0, and then that would have had the Eagles thinking, oh no, here we go again. Instead, LeBlanc makes the play on an underthrown ball, gets the interception. Eagles drive down. Foles drops in a perfect pass to Jordan Matthews. Boom, they're up 7-0. And I think it took the air out of the building a little bit. I think this week, the Saints are going to be a lot more in tune. I think Brees won't miss. He missed at least two touchdown passes against the Eagles. He missed on the first play of the game, and then he missed to Taysom Hill later when if he throws the ball a little bit further, it's an easy touchdown as well. I think Brees is going to be locked in. I think he'll play well. I think the Saints will get up early, and I think that will take the Rams a little bit out of their running game, force Jared Goff to throw the football more. And I think if Jared Goff is throwing the football more, that bodes well for the Saints. What about you, Roberto? What do you got?
Well, I had the Patriots beginning of the season going to the Super Bowl, but they've been terrible on the road this year. And the Chiefs defense has been playing better of late. And I think it's going to be a low scoring game. I think it's going to be an ugly game because of the weather. But I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I say the Chiefs are going to.
So wait a minute. Before the season started, you picked the Patriots and you picked the Saints to be in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You are the only person on the show who still has both of their playoff team, both of their Super Bowl teams alive. And now on the final day before the AFC and NFC championship games, you are now bailing on your preseason Super Bowl pick. That is a bad move.
Play Even the Price is Right loser horn
Patriots
on yourself.
The Patriots are going to lose.
Yeah.
You got to stick to them now because you look like a genius if they end up winning.
Yeah, Roberto's got to play the horn on himself.
Roberto, I mean, yeah, you got to play the horn on yourself. That is a bad call. If I had predicted correctly the two teams that were still alive to make the Super Bowl, I would be trumpeting that to the high heavens, talking about how what a genius I was. And here you had the opportunity potentially to show up on Monday.
I'm modest. I'm modest, Clay.
Are you flipping back now?
Yeah.
This is like the guy who's trying to decide if he's going to break up with a girl or propose to her, and then she says she's pregnant, and so you get married. Yeah. That never works well. You just screwed yourself.
Wait, are you flip-flopping back, Roberto?
Yeah, he flip-flopped back the other direction. I called him out on it. Yeah. I'm not kidding. There's a lot of couples out there. You may be married to one where you're like, I'm about to break up with this girl, and then she says I'm pregnant, and you're like, hey, you want to get married instead? Those relationships never work.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a bulging stricter stuck to my face.
Ma'am, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
What happens when you have a pet giant crocodile? Sometimes things don't go well. It was a 17-foot-long crocodile. Well, the crocodile ate the scientist. Deezy Tuwo The head of the C.V. Yosiki Laboratory in Indonesia was apparently dragged to her death by the crocodile. The crocodile was named Mary, M-E-R-R-Y. It was not a merry day for Deezy. The creature, which killed another crocodile recently, apparently, according to this story, propelled itself up an 8-foot wall to get at Tuo. They have the picture of this woman. When her coworkers arrived Friday morning, they noticed her in the water. That's not a good sign. Mary, the crocodile, 17 foot long, lying on the ground. Inside the creature's jaws was the woman's ravaged body. When rescuers attempted to retrieve the body, the crocodile lashed out violently. This was a messy situation. Reptile finally captured. Quote of the woman who was killed, she was the head of the lab, a quiet person. We're confused about how this happened. Another coworker said, we were curious when we looked at the crocodile pool. There was a floating object. It was Deezy's body. We were afraid to touch it, and we immediately reported the incident at the police station. The investigator added, it's possible the crocodile jumped from the side. Maybe it's because the crocodile was still full. It didn't finish eating her body. Police said they were looking for the Japanese owner of the lab. I believe this owner must acknowledge the horrible incident. If there is no permit, he will be detained. Maybe don't have a 17-foot crocodile. I don't know about you, but this seems like a pretty easy solution. If you don't want one of your workers to get killed by a 17-foot crocodile, maybe don't have the 17-foot crocodile. Is that a crazy idea? Seems rational to me. 17 feet.
Yeah. I'm not even trying to have a 2-foot crocodile.
Forget that. I mean, yeah. Look, I mean, to me, this is totally on the laboratory owner. A 17-foot crocodile. I'm blown away by the idea that somebody would think that's a good idea to just keep it. And it's one thing if you get killed by a crocodile out in the wild, but to just have a 17-foot crocodile, I can't even think about it. You got anything else for me?
Yeah. You've seen a calico cat before, right?
Yeah.
Bright orange, yellow, black colors. Well, a rare calico lobster has been spared from the boiling pot thanks to its 1 in 30 million mutation, and it's going to be headed to a Georgia aquarium. The owner of Ocean City Seafood in Silver Spring, Maryland, noticed the lobster in a batch of crustaceans caught off the coast of Maine. He set it aside thinking, this looks different. He called the National Aquarium in Baltimore, asked how to take care of it. When they found out what he had, they told him, dude, these are super rare. So it's headed now to the Georgia Aquarium. They are in the early planning stages of figuring out how to care for this thing.
Do we have a picture of this thing?
Yeah, I'll tweet it out. They seldom survive in the wild because that bright orange, yellow, and black make them obviously easy prey to their predators.
To stand out,
yeah,
right? Like
exactly.
There's every now and then an albino, like lobster or crab or whatever, and usually they get eaten because they're white, and so they stand out. What else? Anything else?
Yeah, in your neck of the woods, police in Nashville relocated a coyote that ran into an event in the city.
Yeah, this is crazy.
He trapped himself in the bathroom. You saw this?
Yeah, the story. There's a coyote.
Yeah.
We're used to a lot of cougars in downtown Nashville, but we're not used to coyotes. Yeah, like a coyote was just in the bathroom of the main convention center
chilling
in downtown
Nashville. Yeah, chilling inside the Nashville Music City Center on top of the bathroom counter. They found out that he would be euthanized if they took it to a local shelter. So some of the employees loaded the coyote into the back of the police's patrol car. They drove it out to the woods. That way they could keep it alive.
Oh, it's very, very nice of them.
Nice going, Nashville.
Can you imagine, though, opening that door and seeing a coyote in the bathroom?
Yeah, looking like the bathroom attendant.
Yeah, I mean, he was like up there, like in front of the mirror. Now, a lot of people probably just would think it was a dog, at least initially, because a coyote doesn't look that much different, but that's wild.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Joined now by Washington State head football coach Mike Leach. Coach, it's the offseason. What are you up to?
You know, so far so good. It's only barely started. It's always good to go into the off season after a bowl win. Everybody's in school. They're starting to. We do kind of an endurance thing first, so that they have the energy and whatnot. Build on that base in order to work really hard. Then we'll have a number of teams, split them up into teams so they compete in everything, from academics to weights to the runs and agilities. And then, you know, off we go. And then to try to get ourselves in the best position for spring. And we have kind of a later spring.
Do you, in this offseason, have anything that you're focused on? I know in a lot of offseasons you decide to find something that is intriguing to you to kind of pursue. Is there any subject that's kind of percolating in your mind right now and you're thinking that's what I'm going to read about a lot this offseason?
Usually it happens just sort of generally. You know, I'll start reading a book or get on something and something will be good enough, or I maybe even see it on TV. And something will be good enough that I just continue it, you know. I haven't hit any one thing, but I do need to go back to reading more. I haven't read as much lately. Part of it is I sit and I piddle with my phone. And whether it's, you know, texts, which, you know, what those texts spawn, you know, one it's like, you know, those guys having rabbits in your yard or pigs in those ranches in Texas. I mean, one text message has a funny way of spawning about eight others. And then, well, occasionally you can find something pretty good news-wise on the phone, but there's a lot of red herrings. So I need to just shut the phone down, get rid of the phone, and be real disciplined about reading a book or two. And I'm usually reading a couple at a time.
This is actually really cool. You are going to teach a course or co-teach a course. I've got the syllabus in front of me right now, or the proposed syllabus. It's called Leadership Lessons in Insurgent Warfare and Football Strategy in March and April, five classes, an hour and a half at Washington State. And I'm reading right now from the overview that you posted on Twitter. This class explores tactics and strategy common in both guerrilla warfare and college football to provide a backdrop for critical thinking and leadership lessons. In particular, how can insurgent forces facing a large conventional force develop and utilize asymmetric advantages to prevail in battle? The class is taught by you and also a Michael Bumgardner, who is a former senator who helped coordinate political and economic counterinsurgency operations in the Office of Joint Strategic Planning and Assessment. I mean, this is pretty crazy in Baghdad during the Iraq surge. How long have you been thinking about doing this?
You know, I hope we get to do it. But first of all, how it all started is me and Senator Bumgardner thought it'd be a cool idea, thought it'd be fun to do, and we talk back and forth a lot, or he'll come to practice and stuff, and then had the opportunity to travel to Cambodia with him this last year. And then, so we talked about it and that there's some similarities and things. He's taught classes like this, worked for the State Department, of course. And so then there is a certain number of parallels as we got to talking with football, for example. You know, there's things you're trying to defend. There are things you're trying to attack. There's things you want to build up. There's things you want to collapse. There's things you can compromise. There's things you can't. And, you know, and you talk about the superior spore, superior force you're going against. You know, you got to use all the resources you have, which would be, in our case, in football space and personnel. And so really to just kind of draw some parallels on how you try to work through your resources. I think the discussion would be fantastic because I think you'd get a lot of great points of view in the class with the students and things like that. And the discussion, I think, would be pretty captivating. If it's not, then if somebody's boring, you got to cut them off and just call on the other person, you know. But, and I don't know that it's going to go. I mean, we just threw this out there as an idea, as in, what if this happened? You know, what if we did this? And then pretty soon we had about 50,000 students ready to sign up. So, but we do have a stadium sitting there, you know. And, you know, we're serious about it for sure. We're serious about it, but also just throwing it out there. And you know, if we're told no, then we'll accept that too. But a number of potential students hope will be able to do it.
This is really cool. The class assignment is prepare a 7-slide presentation on recommendations for U.S. policy in Yemen, and then also design 3 prepared football plays, including 1 red zone for Washington State's 2019 game versus Houston. When's the last time you came up with a new football play?
You know, usually in most cases there are wrinkles on old plays.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of you dress up an older play. Because part of it is so you want it to be as tough as possible on the receiving end and as simple as possible on the execution end, you know. So as you execute a play, you want it to be very familiar to as many people as possible and maybe adjusting just a couple things, and so you can fire it out there kind of instant, kind of explosively. And because these things are harder to execute than they look on the board, they always look brilliant on the board. You draw it on the board, you know, all you got to do is give some football coach a pen and everybody's a genius on the board, you know. But then out there in real life, that's a different deal. So as far as just a straight up new play, that probably only happens a couple times a year. And then usually they're run just a few times and shelved and that type of thing. And then, but it was fun while it lasted. So, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, though, to a good play is you want to utilize the personnel. You want to attack the space. And then almost without exception, if somebody designs a play for you, it'll have a certain amount of trickery to it. So it'll be like an episode of Wile E. Coyote or Foghorn Leghorn, I suspect.
We're talking to Mike Leach, head football coach of Washington State. I've got a question for you, and I don't know if you've ever contemplated this, but I've wondered it for a while, and so maybe you can use this sometime. I think I've discovered a glitch in college football and NFL rules, and I want you to tell me whether I'm thinking incorrectly here or if you've ever contemplated doing this. When you have
I know the rules.
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll see. You have a running clock late in a game. As you're trying to run out the clock, right before you snap, you false start, right? And then you take the 5-yard penalty, and then you would, theoretically, they keep the clock running in both college football and the NFL, and they go back and they start it again. Why couldn't you false start 5 or 6 times in a row and run a clock out, intentionally having somebody false start for the final play? Because I've never seen anybody be able to turn down a false start penalty. It seems like to me you could run out a clock by just false starting intentionally multiple times at the end of a game.
You know, there was a team, or what they used to do, and I heard this at a clinic one time, they didn't false start, but what they would do is they just tell their linemen to, you know, just tackle the opposition.
Yeah.
And just hold the ball as long as you wanted to. I mean, so in other words, the offensive line just tackles, you know, forget holding. Oh, is it going to be holding? You damn right. It's going to be holding.
Right.
It's going to be bear hugging,
yes.
You know, and you just bear hug them.
And lay on top of them on the ground.
Yeah, the other team, their choice is either accept the penalty, and then you get to do it again because you get the down over.
Yes.
Know? So you get the down over, and then you just do it again and do it again. I mean, do it 20 times if you got enough space, you know. But or
until you would eventually get to 1 untimed down, right? In theory, you would be able to keep doing that, and eventually you get to 1 untimed down, and in theory, you could just take the snap and take a knee, right?
Yes. And I actually think that would work.
It's interesting that stuff like that doesn't happen, and then you'd have to adjust the rules, certainly, but I think you could get away with it in one big game at some point. I'd love to see you do that. All right, so I'm curious. You see, for a long time, you've seen it. People have seen your offense, and they have said, okay, that's great for college, but it won't work in the NFL. And now, suddenly, the NFL has decided, oh, you know what? These college offenses make a lot of sense in the NFL, too. Have you ever interviewed for an NFL job is part one. Part two is, Do you take a lot of joy in seeing the NFL finally acknowledge that a lot of the things that you do on the offensive side of the ball in college make sense on the NFL too? Or do you think, what took you idiots so long?
Well, okay, so first I think that I interviewed with the Bengals, and that was right after I got hired to be offensive coordinator at Oklahoma. And we've just gone through spring. And two reasons that I stayed with being offensive coordinator was, one, I got to call the plays. And then, two, I didn't feel good about, I'd just gotten hired, and it was Bob Stoops' first year. And we'd been through spring and had done some good things and recruited the quarterback, and just didn't feel good about leaving people high and dry at that point. So, yeah, that was the only time I've had a serious conversation about going to the NFL. The other thing I think the offense, not the air raid as a whole, but something similar with similar thoughts and philosophies. And, you know, some of the stuff being called West Coast offense now, Bill Walsh is rolling around in his grave. I mean, there's stuff called West Coast offense that is an embarrassment. You know, it's basically, it's the two or three most conservative elements of it, and then they're pretending that they're doing the same thing Bill Walsh did, and it's ridiculous. But, you know, that had a lot of air raid elements to it as the 49ers were winning Super Bowls, and it also inspired us as we were trying to put together our offensive package, and there's elements of it that we copied too. And then as far as the NFL accepting, not accepting, it's hard for me to totally define that, because as you talk to coaches, every time I've ever talked to NFL coaches, they've always had quite a lot of respect for what we do. It's when you get into scouts and the media covering the NFL. But sometimes, you know, it can be coaches, but it just seems to me it's more scouts and, you know, that group a little bit that act like there's something special about the NFL.
We're talking to Mike Leach, Washington State head football coach. Would you ever want to coach in the NFL? Like, does any part of you, when you see a lot of guys who are, you know, in their 30s and have a little bit of scruffy facial hair, do you wish you were in your 30s and had scruffy facial hair because you could be the next hottest thing in the NFL? It seems kind of crazy that these guys are all getting opportunities, and you, with your track record at Washington State and certainly at Texas Tech, haven't necessarily gotten much of attention.
I've been in great situations where I've really enjoyed them. I mean, I really enjoyed coaching at Texas Tech. And then, of course, we had a few dubious administrators, but, really there's like four people that wrecked the whole experience for, you know, couple million. And then Washington State has been a fantastic experience too. You know, the NFL, I think, it's a little different than college. College, as far as, you know, your resources or, you know, tradition and recruiting base, that type of thing. And then the NFL, it's, you know, the owner and the GM. You know, do you have a lot of control with regard to building your team? Do the owner and the GM cooperate? Or you got a situation there in New England where you have an owner that had a lot of success, as he describes it, on 60 Minutes, running his company, and when he started running his team like his company and just trusted the people to do their job, had just phenomenal success. And then, of course, Belichick essentially, hires the GM. And then from there, he controls all that he sees. So you always have precise and clear direction. You know, if you got in a situation where you had a great owner and you had a great GM, I think it could be a fantastic experience. It's funny, though, you mentioned, you know, the young guys all in the NFL now. Okay, so when I was their age coming out, everybody coaching in the NFL was like, was like 70. Like in their 60s and 70s. They're all 60 and 70. You know, everybody was old. The whole NFL was old. Everybody was old. And of course, you know, guys would strive to get in it, but everybody was old. And as these guys got older, because they'd get in the NFL, stay in the NFL, and do a good job. I mean, the difference would be back then you'd see teams that were and you never saw them not line up right. And you see teams not line up right now a lot more often. I mean, somebody's out of position or he's not even lined up right. I mean, how do you not line up right? And you know, with any football team, it just drives you most crazy if you fail to line up right or you don't line up right. And then, but they never didn't line up right. I mean, always lined up right. I mean, and you weren't going to fool them. Guys were going to be in position. But, you know, sometimes it would, their teams would be uninspired, you know, would kind of play uninspired, kind of lack a certain amount of emotion. I mean, they'd play as if they were coached by guys that were 75, you know. And so then, well, then there was kind of a youth movement, and just it was sudden, I, you know, and who knows what they talked about in those secret meetings.
Why do you think you never got that? You said you got an opportunity back in the day with the Cincinnati Bengals, but that was a very long time ago. Why do you think you've never gotten that NFL opportunity?
You know, I haven't really sought it. You know, I haven't chased it. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, I think you do like you do in college. You just go there and just, you know, get in the pond. You know, once you get in the pond, I mean, you know, your chances of having some success are pretty high. And it's a smaller pond, too. You'll get to know each other in the NFL quite quickly. You know, you go to the combine or the Senior Bowl. It's kind of a more intimate group because there's just a lot less numerically. There's a lot less people. You know, it's not like going to the national convention where you and your buddy talk about meeting at the convention and you don't even see your buddy because there's thousands of people. I mean, this is a deal where, you know, there's a couple hundred and, you know, I haven't really chased it. You know, I haven't made a bunch of phone calls and I don't attend the Senior Bowl or the Combine every year. You know, I think that's part of it right there is just pursuing it or chasing it, you know.
We're talking to Mike Leach. All right, final question for you. There's been a lot of controversy. Clemson won the national championship. They've already visited the White House. Your team won 11 games last year. You won 11 games at Texas Tech before that. If one year your team got invited to the White House and there were hamburgers there, what would your thought be?
Oh, I would definitely eat the hamburgers, no doubt. I mean, if you're offered anything at the White House, I think it's quite an honor. I think any chance to see the president, I mean, the office alone, I mean, is something that our country should respect and always have respect for. And I think that regardless of who's president, and, you know, some I've liked better than others, regardless of who's president, the failure to respect that office is, you know, also is a certain failure to, you know, respect your country. And, if my team were successful enough to go visit the president and in the White House, it would be an honor. And it gets bigger than any personality conflicts or little petty disagreements. I mean, it's a recognition by, you know, your country that you've done something distinguished. And in the midst of a government shutdown, which, let's be honest, nobody really feels or experiences the shutdown. The politicians now have to make their own coffee and file their own papers, which I think is outstanding. And I also think it's what they deserve because they really haven't gotten anything accomplished lately. So as far as I'm concerned, this shutdown can go on for months longer, for all I care. And as a matter of fact, I think we ought to, every 6 months, go ahead and have a government shutdown to experiment with what positions aren't necessary, because I think our government's far too big and far too cumbersome as it is, and so we need to discover positions to do without. But in the course of a government shutdown, if I was given a hamburger, I wouldn't feel any, and I don't even like hamburgers very much, if I was given a hamburger, I wouldn't feel like it diminishes the honor and the scope of what my team had accomplished and what our country's about in any way.
Outstanding stuff as always, Mike Leach. We need to grab a beer sometime, sit and chat. I appreciate the time and I appreciate you getting up early with us this morning.
Well, that sounds good. It's great to be on. So you're in L.A. or you're in Nashville?
We're on 300 stations nationwide. So you're in all 50 states today.
You just work your way around so nobody feels ripped off, huh?
Yeah, that's right. We try to make everybody happy in all 50 states every morning from 6 to 9 a.m.
Well, that's an impossible task. Good luck with that. But
that is Mike Leach. Tell him you enjoyed the interview at @coach_Leach. I tweeted it out. It makes a big difference. People enjoy hearing from you guys.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.